Hey, dude, this dog leg stinks, man.
Okay, groomer, do something about it, man.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and co-star of the show, Miss Barbara Bird.
Oh, Susie, one of my favorite people to talk to is our guest today, Dave Campanella of Best Shot. I am so psyched.
Hey, hello, everybody.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to episode 398 of the Groom Pod. Boy, we are almost at 400 episodes. I'm thinking we should do something for our 400th, Barbara. So ruminate on that for a little while. It's January 7th in the new year of 2024 in Snohomish, Washington, Tucson, Arizona, and in Kentucky. Why do I always forget where you live?
I live in Versailles, Kentucky, Versailles, Kentucky.
Ah, yes, in Kentucky. And today, our whole show is an interview with Dave Campanella, who is the marketing director and our guy at Best Shot. So what's new this week is not happening, but we still have to honor our obligations. If you haven't found GroomMore, you're missing out. GroomMore is an all-in-one software solution for your grooming business. Whether you are a solo mobile groomer or manage several shops, GroomMore has everything you need. 24-hour online booking and forms, routing, credit card processing, reminders, Google Calendar and QuickBooks integration, and so much more. And the best customer service anywhere. Shop, mobile, or house call, GroomMore has you covered. And they're giving us a free month. Just enter GroomPod22 in the coupon code. Well, this is really exciting. Dave, you are our most visited guest.
I know. All I do is listen to podcasts, and I just want to be heard, I guess. I don't know.
Well, we appreciate it every time you come on.
We all do.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Barbara and I were curious, how did you get into the marketing game?
I was fortunate enough to go to college back in Cleveland. I went to Cleveland State University. So, I mean, think about it, Cleveland State. But anyway, and I wanted to get in business. I knew that much. And I thought about being an accountant. And my uncle was a controller for a company. So I went and visited him. And I'm like, oh, hell no, I can't see myself behind a desk doing that. But if I was going to be in the business, sales is where it was, you know, figure it out. And I got in a sales job out of school. The day after commencements, I started working for a company called Royal Appliance, which was Royal Dirt Devil. I sold vacuum cleaners and called on service centers. And that was marketing and customer service, and kind of honed my spiel, my demonstrations, my professionalism, and learned a few things of what to do and what not to do along the way. But it was a lot of fun. And I just like being with people and helping people. And then I had a long stint with them. I was with them for probably about 15 years. And then, you know, companies, they go public and different management gets in. And one by one, they start fishing people away. And I thought my next move, I would try to get into advertising. So I went to work for a company years ago. It was called Advo. A lot of people know who Velasys is. Those are the people who stuff your mailboxes with junk mail.
Valpak.
Yeah, Valpaks, things like that, Velasys. Advo was the biggest at the time. They were a billion-dollar company. That was appealing because before a lot of this internet and what you can do now with digital media and Facebook and all the geo-targeting and behavioral stuff, they were doing it back then with postal carrier routes. They could do surveys and had a way of back then of taking buyer behavior and demographics, and you could target and market that way. And I thought that was interesting. And I did that for about 4 years, and then I went off to work for a newspaper before I found myself out of a job. There you go. But I had to take care of the family. So I was doing what I had to do. And my wife, Tracy, knew the folks at Best Shot. She knew Bill Marshall, the founder, and introduced me to Mike Gallagher, who owns the, eventually he bought the company. He and I have known each other for about 20 years. And I started consulting, and one thing led to another. And I said to myself, I can see myself doing this, working for a small company, because I work for large companies. And he made the decision to move down to Kentucky. And I never thought I'd be moving from Ohio to Kentucky. But I bit the bullet. Tracy and I thought that would be a good opportunity. And it worked out for the most part. You know, love what I do for 20 years, or I should say 18 years. This hasn't been a job. It's something that I like to do, because some of your audience may not know I married a groomer. you know, and we had co-owned and operated the shop. And, you know, but I always was in sales and marketing, and having worked a shop, I'll tell you, when you have the experience, in my case, of being a glorified butt washer on weekends and evenings at my wife's shop, it really does give you a perspective, because we ran a business together. The products we use needed to perform. So when you talk to chemists and formulators, I'm not a chemist, I'm not a formulator, not officially anyways, but you know, you learn to really have an appreciation and a different perspective on the marketing.
This brings up a question. Do you think to be an effective marketer / shampoo representative in the grooming industry, is it important to have been a groomer or been around groomers? Because like Barbara constantly finds mistakes with ingredients and wording and processing that people put on websites and labels and stuff like that. I always figured maybe they never groomed a dog.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with whether they groomed a dog or not. It has to do with whether they've edited or proofread anything ever in their life.
Most of the people who get into the pet industry, there's a lot of mom pa, there's a lot of small family businesses where a lot of passion originated. And you see people in our industry who they were either owned the grooming, or they had pet retail stores, or they showed animals, or they were veterinarians or whatnot. So they're kind of close to it. And I think where you see the mistakes and the craziness is, the bigger the company gets, you tend to lose some of the passion. I think we've had discussions before. Sometimes when companies get bought, the new people in the company, they're good people. They're all lovely people, but they may lose some of that passion and that spark and the true meaning, you know, of the product over time. And for some people, their job is a job. I'm sure my wife, Tracy, would wish that I had that attitude. But for me, there's people who work to live, which I guess is what you're supposed to do. I'm the live to work guy. I got to be in it and put myself into something all in 100%, or I can't function. I can't be half-hearted in what I do. All I can say is, being part of my wife's business, working together with her, being close to it, she introduced me to all of this. And we went to our first trade shows, and she introduced me to the dogs and everything. And it means more. And I guess what we're talking about is passion. Now, you can see passion and you can see sincerity, I think, people who are genuine. And anybody who can fake that, man, they've got a head start. I'm not a good faker. What you see is what you get. But I hope I kind of answered that question.
I have another question for Dave. Can you explain a little bit of the nature of the relationship and the difference between the formulator and the marketer?
Sure. I'm going to give you my personal opinion, and I'm probably going to piss off some people. None of you guys, but
that's what we like.
Yeah. The formulator... You know, and I got to be careful, because I know a lot of people in the industry, like Sandy and Dave over there at Show Season. I would call them, they're active formulators, and they have their business and they do what they do. So where I'm going with this is, I'm not talking about folks like them, but when it comes to the product, if you're running a business and you're selling shampoo, you got to know what you have to offer. Good formulations, yes, matter. But what's going to determine your success is how you run a business and if you can market it and create the band and grow it. And what you need is you need marketing to do that. Luck plays a big part, but you can't rely on luck. You keep, as a marketer, at least as me coming from grooming, I'm always looking to see what new innovations, what new ingredients, if there's anything of legitimate value. And for me, I started asking why. Why does, like for me, it was Best Shot. We were biased. That's who we used. The old Best Shot facility and Bill Marshall were like 2 miles away from where we were. So we would use that. But it's like, why does this stuff work so good? And you start answering questions. And then when I had the opportunity to get into what was more of a sales role at the time, and it evolved quickly into more marketing and directing of the whole sales process, was the importance of knowing what's out there, knowing what you have, understanding why it works, and then you have to be able to duplicate it. So a good formulary is important, but then think of a recipe. You can have that recipe, but then you have to maintain that recipe because things change over time. Suppliers change. You know, we fired one of our suppliers last year, somebody that we dealt business with for 20 years. And then you have to find replacements of those ingredients and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it's the marketing that makes a difference. I'm going to pause and then I can go into a little bit more about marketing. Maybe your listeners want to hear about traditional marketing and how most companies approach marketing a consumer good that you would classify grooming liquids as a consumer good, but we're marketing to professionals, to a trade. So there's all sorts of things you need to consider in building essentially a brand and brand loyalty and a customer base.
I kind of get it that company values and vision often come first and formulation follows, especially in new companies that have an idea that they're going to have a product that has no this, no that, all this, all that. And then the formulator has to kind of find the ingredients that live up to the vision of the company. So sometimes the marketing comes first, and other times the product comes first, and the marketer finds the attributes that they're going to accentuate and market on. And am I right?
You're close. The first thing is who's your customer? If you're writing a book, who are you writing the book to? If you're selling a product, who's your audience? Who's the customer? So the first thing is you have to look at the customer, look at the market. We'll use marketing terms here. We'll use a broad term and say, let's look at the market. Let's look at the pet grooming industry and the customer and who they are. You know, and they could be, PetSmart's this and that, but a lot of independent businesses, you're seeing more independent retailers, whatnot, expanding into self-wash and grooming. You know, this is the market. And then you look at where are the opportunities. It's very competitive. There's a ton of shampoo out there, a lot, and it's competitive. So if you're going to get into this thing called the pet grooming industry, how do you differentiate yourself? And a marketer is going to call it their unique selling proposition. What makes them different than the status quo in general? First, it starts with the brand and who you are and who are you trying to target? Who are you trying to appeal to? And, there's different things. Selling shampoo to a pet store, to a mom and pop pet parent, is and should be a lot different than marketing to a professional. And in order to do that, you need to know your customer. For me, it helps where I came from. Kind of makes you ask questions and see things differently. But then if you listen, they might be saying, like back in the day with Best Shot, going back 35 years ago, most of the products, they smelled pretty, or they smelled like a Spencer gift store. They were thick. They were probably a bit harsh, but they really, as far as conditioning, the conditioners back then sucked. So we realized there's an opportunity to bring some of the innovative conditioners and silicones, is what we identified back then, into the marketplace, and applying it to the grooming industry. And that's kind of an example. And then, you know, it's a matter of getting out and getting to the groomers, going to the shows, advertising, getting people to try your product and building your brand. That's kind of the grassroots. But the formulary back then, it's like, okay, so they spent a lot of time looking at what were the innovations, things that we could bring to conditioners.
You know what's really exciting, Barbara? We are going to be in Tucker, Georgia on March 7th. Let me tell you about that right now. Ever wondered if those buzzword-laden labels really mean anything? All natural, soap-free, organic? How much trust should you put into these marketing terms? And how can you confirm that the ingredients inside the product actually match the claims on the label? Join Barbara Bird on March 7th at the Show Season Tent Sale in Tucker, Georgia for a live educational seminar you don't want to miss. Barbara will be debunking common industry myths and investigating the truth behind good and bad ingredients in pet care. This is your chance to learn what science tells us about some of the most commonly used ingredients so you can truly understand the product labels and separate the fact from the fluff. And that's not all. Get ready to rev up those grooming van engines. Join me for a lively talk about the roller coaster of running a booming mobile grooming business. I'll be dishing out top-notch tips on going mobile, remaining profitable, and building a pack of positively delightful tail-wagging clients. This isn't your run-of-the-mill business class. I'll be serving up my juiciest real-life tales from years as a successful mobile groomer. You'll have a doggone good time while soaking up the secrets you need to rock your mobile grooming game. If you're excited to elevate your grooming business, all while enjoying major deals on top quality grooming supplies from Show Season and Groomers Mall, register for this free event today. You can learn more about this exclusive event for groomers by clicking the link at our Facebook page, facebook.com/group/thegroompod, or going to Show Season Animal Products on Facebook. So what you're saying, though, Dave, what you're saying is you can have the best recipe for an apple crisp in the whole entire world, but if nobody knows about your restaurant, it doesn't really matter.
The goal of the marketer, once you're in your niche, everybody, it seems like they get in and they start hitting the wall, and there's a point where suddenly the dust clears and you got to figure out, how do we keep this thing going, and how do we continue to be successful? And it all really comes down to knowing your customer and knowing your products. Now, yes, from there you can develop opportunities, and the formulary is important. There's assumptions, I think, about the formulary, like, are there bad things, are there good things? You know, who do you trust? I think trust is important. But the formulary is actually easy. But here's what I'm saying. It's easy if you know your customer and what you're trying to achieve. And that's where the tension really has to be done. And where I said earlier when we kicked off that I'm probably going to piss off some people. I personally think that as an industry, shampoo advertising, the bar is really low. Most people, I don't think, do a good job at it, because the tendency is they want to get the sale. You want to make a sale. So what do you tell them? How do you differentiate yourself and show your unique selling, you know, get that unique selling proposition that you have where you're different from everybody else? Well, first of all, shampoo, I mean, it's kind of limited. I mean, it comes down to the detergents, and it's only you're getting a dog clean. Now, Barbara, I'm talking to you guys as professionals. What I realized, and for all you shampoo marketers out there, listen in, because Dave's going to give away the secrets here. In the professional trade, it's all about the conditioners and the methodology and getting the finish effect that you want. We put all this time on, it smells pretty. And then to differentiate, let's focus on claims ingredients, which are nothing more than claims ingredients. There's The argon oil, the whale sperm or whatever it is, and that's a thing in the human industry and some products, whatever it is, what your hook is to differentiate yourself in a shampoo, that's not what's cleaning the dog. So then if everybody's using sodium lauryl sulfate and the first ingredient in the ingredient list is water, we got to find something different. And see, what happens is, see, the marketer, I'm going to try to paint this picture. Bear with me, folks. Your listeners always have, and these things always run long because I say what I say. But anyway, what you got here is in your marketing, as you're building a brand and you're trying to sell something, you have your unique selling proposition. Well, who's your audience? If I know my audience and I know what I got, the marketer, the good marketer, knows the drivers, you know, what drives the customer's needs, okay? There's certain drivers. We're talking, is it convenient? Sometimes it's just engagement. Like, have we ever seen a product where you like the commercials and you laugh and you identify with it? And so there's some engagement. Well, to the professional, it comes down to, can you provide some education? Can you provide some insight, some legitimate value? Things like trust. And to me, trust in our industry, and if you're talking about ingredients, what you're really talking about is safety. Safety is the underlying theme there, okay? And then you have other things like options. Sometimes the marketer realizes that people want a choice. They want variety, if that's your thing. So you identify those, but then here's the catch. The marketer, if they're really good, they know the words, the phrases that are going to result in movement. And I'm using marketing terms. And the movement is making a decision. And let me give you an example of some movement terms. Minimize effort, maximize results, annihilate odors, speed up drying time. But that's a good one, right? That's important to professionals. So we know metrics. If we can prove and say that we can increase your grooming efficiency, cut grooming by 80%. And in today's world, you never round up to 80%. If I say I can increase grooming time 78.6%, that means more, it sounds more credible, provided I'm telling the truth, okay? There's so many things that the marketer, if they know their customer, and then you can actually go out today, everybody's on their phone and all that information, while your personal privacy is maintained, they still know your buyer behavior. And today you can purchase that. I can target people of similar interests and in different areas. It's called geo-targeting. I'm not going to get into it too deep, but I'm just putting it out to your audience that you can take this thing as far as you want to go to understanding and driving a decision to help make a sale. But there's one problem with that. When you have all this information as a marketer and I want to get a sale and I know what motivates people, it comes as no surprise that fear is the number one easy go-to button, not just in shampoo, but in politics, selling everything, safety, trust. A lot of times if you want to convey safety and whatnot, they go immediately to fear because we're hardwired for fear. We're human, right? So what I'm saying is, if you don't know your customer and you're trying to get sales, the easy way is to go the fear route. And we can push buttons. It's one thing to know the drivers, but if I want to get movement and get somebody to make a decision, I can cast doubt. I'm not saying I do that, but this is what the professional groomer has to be aware of. In my opinion, you need to know what you're up against. You know, I don't want to make it sound too adversarial, but remember all this social media and all the advertising, it's all subjective. Subjectivity focuses on what? Emotions, feelings, public opinion, groupthink. That's why you see testimonials today. You're going to probably start seeing testimonials now more on Best Shot's website, because today What's more important than the Wikipedia explanations and what you have to say to describe your product, and even more so, unfortunately, than the ingredients sometimes, is the younger generation. They just want to, they want to know that if 300 people give this a 5-star rating and they have a few positive testimonials, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear from their peers. It means more. In fact, the last statistic said that 80-some% of the decision today is more based on what other people think. I'm going to pause for a second. All this technology gets misinterpreted by marketers. And stated before that, I think the bar set kind of low in our industry. You know, that's my opinion. But what'll happen is, now you go on social media platforms, and have you ever been on a string and you're thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't sound legit. It sounds like somebody manufactured that string because they're trying to promote a product. Or then you get the people who go on a string and they'll bash and poo-poo something. This is a new strategy in marketing today. There's people out there that actually pump out positive testimonials now in this new age. And then people that, you know, will poo-poo and bash things. How do you know what's true? How do you know what's not? Which is what I'm trying to do, is make you aware that good advertisers, number one, they should know the customers. I should ask you questions. I love coming on this show because, man, I get an education. And if I'm out of line, you guys put me in my place, and I love it. This is a great focus group. But this type of information society we live in, we know, and you guys have conveyed this brilliantly in your soon-to-be 400 episodes of, yeah, there's a lot of information out there, but information can include a lot of bad information. There's a lot of bad information out there. And marketers can manufacture it and get lazy and go the fear thing. I'm working on something. I'm going to be doing a podcast with my buddy Joe Zuccarello, and he got me thinking about, how does a groomer know the difference? And I'm not talking ingredients. I'm talking with all this advertising and confusion. How do you make a decision? And it got me thinking, and it led to me calling up you guys, and it's like, hey, you want to just talk? I think we need to have this discussion, but in order to understand and make a good decision, yes, ingredients are important and you got to know this, but you also have to have an idea that the person selling you knows a lot. And there's certain methods that they use, not to screw you necessarily. If they're doing it legitimately, they want to get the point across and they know what they have to offer. So they make sure they push the right drivers and convey the point for you to take a look. In the end, you're going to try that product and make the decision. This is where the formulary comes in. If I have a crappy formulary, you're only going to buy that product once because you just got duped. So if you know your customer, you got a good formula behind it, good science, and you get the people, part of the obligation of a good marketing campaign, a good brand building process, it's building trust. And how do I build trust? Customer service, transparency, ingredient disclosure is a big one if you want to build trust, because you can address the safety and all these other things. The reason why people are fearful of ingredients is because there's so many games being played and claims being made, because they, in the end, some people maybe are a little more desperate to get you to buy their product than some people. And I'm not naming names, but you guys can figure out who they are. They'll say anything to get a sale.
One of the things that interests me is that in the cosmetic industry overall, the chemical suppliers also market.
Oh, yeah.
With all the tactics that you've mentioned, the chemical suppliers market to the formulators and the marketers of their ingredients. And the chemical suppliers are often the place where safety is reviewed and where productivity is measured. Mm-hmm. Chemical suppliers measure the performance of their ingredients in order to market them to the companies, right? And so some of the talking points that actually end up in advertising, especially if there's not a marketing person in between, mm-hmm. are the points that the chemical suppliers have made.
There's a lot of truth to that, absolutely.
Who reviews the safety? Here again, we fall on trust. The company has to trust their formulators. The formulators have to trust the chemical suppliers.
A lot, and your listeners have heard you mention the CIR, which is probably really good. Occasionally, people will kind of poo-poo that. Well, that's industry-driven. Yeah. You know, that's a good thing because the industry doesn't want to get sued. When you look at the EU and a lot of the different databases that are out there, there is accountability there. Because what people forget is in the cosmetic industry, a reminder to your listeners, the human cosmetic industry is what drives the pet industry. It trickles down and we pick and try to apply to our profession what's going to work best. And I'm glad for that, because if that wasn't there, then I'd be really scared. Because as far as the pet, without all that testing and understanding of things, you'd have a real problem. I also want to paint this picture. There's so much innovation, and just as pet shampoo, everybody's trying to differentiate, you'll get public demand, which is a lot of time public demand is driven by misinformation and bad marketing. Here's my point. SLS free, paraben free. What's that one? Phthalates? I still can't pronounce it. You know, what the hell is that doing in most foods? Yeah, I mean, most people aren't using these things. What's going to drive this is there a demand for the product? And people are still saying, oh, we don't want to use silicones. We got to find out with a natural ingredient that's going to perform like a silicone. And I laugh and I'm like, good luck with that one, especially when silicones are made of, you know, silicones are derived from oxygen and silica, which are one and two elements, you know, on the periodical table. We got more of that than we got anything else. We're not going to run out of it soon. But my point is, you'll get this marketing. We need something different. When I was prepping for this talk I'm going to have with Joe next week, we record next week, I just got online and it's like, how do people know what's a good shampoo? And of course, all you have to do is type into Google and you get those wonderful responses back. The top five things you need to know when you buy shampoo. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. So then I read it. And one of the things was, don't use any nasty ingredients. Okay, define nasty. Well, you don't want to use sodium lauryl sulfate. And I'm sorry, I left my notes at work, but they said, use this sodium blah, 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 succinate, which I believe is a sugar-derived version. That's organic. I went to the Skin So Deep database, you know, EWG. Yeah. You've talked about that. And they're not so bad. If you know how to use them, I plug in sodium lauryl sulfate and I plug in this ingredient they said was so great. They're both rated identically the same. The marketer is using that ingredient solely as a talking point to say that we don't use sodium lauryl sulfate. And everybody goes, okay, it's groupthink, it's bandwagon. As a company that actually private labels, and none of my private label companies that I work with are doing this, but they'll ask, should we be putting paraben-free and cruelty-free and phthalate-free and free this, free that on the label? Because everybody else seems to do that. They're doing it because everybody else is, because they're afraid. It's like when back in the old days, you put on the grooming shop window, there was a little cardboard sign written with a Sharpie, and it says, we don't use tranquilizers.
Right. You had to, because people were afraid that we were using tranquilizers. That was in my day.
The only people who were using the tranquilizers were the ones that worked at the veterinary office that had access to the tranquilizers. Now, let me paint a picture. I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, because on a lot of our labels, I have to put cruelty-free on there. Now, I'll go that far. And the only reason is because everybody else is painting this picture. And to me, that's innocent. You know, the ironic thing about cruelty-free, you ask, what is cruelty-free? Well, we don't test on animals. You talk to Sandy, and somewhere along the line, that ingredient was, but here, I'm going to be a real stinker. I'm not picking on you, Sandy and Dave, at show season. I love you guys. I'm using you guys because I respect you. I do the same thing. We're developing a product. Who do? We give it to some groomers, and we say, hey, Barbara, hey, Susan, try this out. In other words, you're testing it on animals. You know, I mean, if I really want to be a stinker about it.
Trial is a little bit different than testing, Dave. Come on, let's get a little bit accurate here. Trialing is different from testing.
Yes.
Testing
yes.
has measurements. Trialing yeah. is subjective.
Yeah, and any response, and back to your point too, the responsible manufacturers know where to look and turn, and you're going to try to, when you're purchasing ingredients, you're not going to purchase something that doesn't have a background. There isn't some guy on the street that comes in with a suitcase and goes, hey, best shot, I got this shit that is amazing. Why don't you try it? Doesn't work like that. Nobody's going to take that liability. The CIR does a lot of testing on all of these ingredients, and they put it out there on public record because what they're really doing, they're not trying to screw
CIR?
They're trying to cover their ass for the right reasons. You know, to have that information that's available. The average consumer is going to have a tough time.
Are we talking about
Yeah, I'm talking about CIR, yes.
Well, CIR doesn't do any testing. They do not test. They review scientific studies.
Yes. But I'm saying they maintain a great database that a lot of people are using.
Well, much more accurate.
And it's the chemical companies, the developers that are trying to, they're the ones doing the testing. You know, they got to be careful.
Hold that thought, Dave. We want to welcome Randy and Cheryl Lowe from Precision Sharp and invite you to check out their website where you can see their newest precise cut shear called Lynx. It's a patented design featuring a thumb ring that slides the length of the handle for perfect ergonomic placement of your thumb. Slide it and lock it into position to get your best groom on. Check it out at precisionsharp.com. These shears are a game changer for my weirdly shaped hands. I love them. I know we'll do way more on this next week, but I just want to mention how fabulous these shears are. Go ahead, Dave.
Barbara brings up a good point. There's trialing and there's chemical testing, but to not get too far off the track, what happens in our industry is the people who are selling this stuff, I'm talking to marketers. The question is how far away are they removed from the customer? Do they really know the customer? Are they marketing a need? Or are they just checking a box in a category like, oh, here's another whitening shampoo? For example, when we came out with our whitening shampoo, the first thing we started doing was polling and questions and looking for an opportunity, finding out what the real criteria and needs of the customer were. And it's funny, when you ask, what do you like about your whitenings? What don't you like? Well, the first thing you hear from everybody is what they don't want to see, what they don't like.
That's right.
You know, and it was amazing. So it's like, wow. So you're saying this is a real problem. So as a formulator, from a formulating standpoint, you go and you take a look and you start doing some comparison. And it's just like, okay, well, what can we do with what's out there in ingredients, proven, safe? Basically, you're putzing around with ingredients that you know from databases how much is too much. Every manufacturer theoretically could put way too much detergent in a product where it would be really harsh. I mean, I'm talking like really harsh. Nobody's going to do that. But you look at the ingredients and you think, is it got a good track record? Was it safe? What's the performance like? And then you play with it and then you get it out there and trial it to see if what kind of difference it can make. A lot of times you learn more about the product once it hits the field. For an example, when we came out with the Max, I talked about that for a while. It really wasn't anything complicated. We were just isolating an ingredient, but it's like, how the hell do you market it? And I looked at competitive products, which was the stuff. Lovely company, iconic. I have nothing bad to say about it, but you know, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, well, that's kind of ripe. Nobody's challenged that. And the ingredients have come along such a far way. So we played with it. And it's like, this is definitely, we got something here. And then when we finally did market it, about 6 months later, I realized I probably undersold it because I told everybody on the bottle, a little concentrated bottle of 8.5 ounces makes over 10 quarts. And it was more like 20 quarts, which is 40 pints, 16 ounce bottles. I'm like, holy cow, this stuff's something. And then you start getting positive customer reviews on it. And you start to say, wow, that's good. And you start taking notes on what we have to offer here, you know, and how do you market it? And it kind of evolves. I'm all over the place. And thank you guys for listening to this. I hope it's entertaining. I think the focus in our industry, I always tell folks the key here is we're talking to professionals, and as professionals, we have obligations to know what it is we're selling. And as marketers to the profession, we got to make sure that we are going about that in the proper way. Customers tend to be so focused on the shampoo side of it. And in my opinion, that's actually the easy side. It's the conditioning. Where the real innovation, the real opportunities are.
Yeah, I'm just agreeing with that. It's been the most interesting development in the pet grooming liquids area has been conditioners and detanglers and, you know, those kind of grooming aids and hair help.
Yeah.
Shampoos, even though they may contain some of these other exotic ingredients, basically the additives in there are kind of do no harm additives. And what we call claims ingredients, which for me to explain, are ingredients that are used just because you can say certain things about your product. You know, like points.
Forgive me for saying, goes back to that unique selling proposition. How are you different from the status quo? And these claims ingredients, and I'm not saying in every case, but a lot of times, yeah, you can talk about those points and use it for differentiation. But at the end of the day, are they really what's influencing the cleansing and the cleaning of the pet? Is it hype or is it bullshit? Now, conditioners are different. I think with conditioners as a whole, there's truth in advertising, because we know that conditioners, we figured this out a lot of times by accident, that, yeah, they smooth the coat. They do so much. You can see the dramatic things a conditioner does. So there's a lot of truth there. They get rid of static. They do the different things. And the good news about conditioners is they work best when you're pulling from a variety. That's where you can get real creative, because certain mixes and certain essential oils and certain different, let's call them claims ingredients, you can sometimes see legitimate differences. You may not be able to define it, but you can see it. I think as an industry, we suck at promoting conditioners. It's all about detangling and speed drying and this and that. And we're not educating people on how to use these things. I still roll my eyes where I think you've all heard me on, if you followed some of my previous discussions on your podcast about how, you know, I came up with the concept of a three-step system, nothing proprietary. I was just trying to help people, you know, follow up with a method. But you still get people who will only use a shampoo. And they have no idea, because they don't know ingredients like what you're trying to teach, Barbara, that product may be harsh. It may be making the coat staticky. They may be making more work for themselves because they're only using that shampoo and they're not following up with an appropriate conditioner and why they need the condition. You've also heard me say that in our marketing, we do a lot of pitching a method, a system or whatnot, but what we're really trying to do is get you results, because we owe it to the professional. That's part of our branding. Now, I'm only speaking for myself.
You know how to get the most out of your products. To use a shampoo, a conditioner, and a spray.
Exactly.
I've been using Best Shot for many years because I was interested in it from the get-go. But in the beginning, I used only the shampoo and conditioner. And I figured if I used plenty of conditioner, I didn't need the spray. Mm-hmm. But then I started trying the spray and said, holy moly.
Cannoli.
Holy moly. This helps, especially with long or thick coats. Yes, you get a certain amount of depositing of conditioner using a rinse off conditioner, but you get even more if you're spraying lightly in targeted areas as you dry and comb the dog, and it just makes a huge difference. So all three. Yep.
I was the opposite, Barbara. I was using the shampoo because shampoo, right? And the spray, and never using a conditioner because I had had such rotten experiences trying to get dogs dry in the grooming trailer when using the old style of conditioners.
Or even rinsing dogs with the old conditioner, like the yellow one. Some of those early, especially if they were like deep conditioners or moisturizing or intense moisturizing, they were so waxy that it would take fucking forever to dry them. And that's why a lot of groomers dropped out of conditioning, because they couldn't rinse them. And yep. If you're in a mobile and water is a precious entity, you're not going to want to. And then there was the advice to shampoo and rinse and rinse and rinse, right? Remember? And rinse and rinse and rinse. Condition and rinse and rinse and rinse. There was just like so much emphasis on getting rid of the product that you think, well, screw it. I just will skip that and I'll spray something on and get enough.
Now, let me stop right there. I'm going to stop you right there. Now, this is something that people don't look at. Everything that you've described is a driver to purchase a product that you're looking for. Technically, if we were teaching this, this would be what they fall under, NEED alignment or fulfillment driver. You've just mentioned all those things that you were looking for. So then the question of it is in my marketing, as far as the movement, I'm going to highlight things like does not weigh down the coat, minimize your effort. If I can put some metrics in there that if you follow this method, this system, that you can reduce your grooming time over 50%. Now we're learning, I have to say 48.6%, because that sounds more impressive, as long as I'm given the truth. Okay. What happens, unfortunately, is some people might embellish, and then you purchase the product and it doesn't live up to all the criteria and the hype. And when you're selling to the trade, you got to avoid that. I think at Best Shed, for the most part, we're not perfect, but I think we've coming where I've come from and marrying a groomer and looking at this and what we're trying to do to be performance and results oriented. I think we've done a good job of, for the most part, staying on the objective to achieve those things that are important, those needs. And that helps build trust. And then if you do have a problem, you get a product, let's just say you just bought it and it was spoiled. Well, if you're fussing around, it takes a while for that to get resolved. Well, versus you call up and it's like, what's the number on the bottom of the bottle? Oh, yes, let's get that handled. Boom. No questions. Quick, good customer service, accountability, ingredient transparency. Those things all build trust. This is what I mean by a groomer, in addition to knowing and what I'm very excited that they're going to learn from you, the folks going to Atlanta and at the associations and presentation you're doing, they're going to learn all about the ingredients and and what to look for in the truth. And that's all important. But hopefully what they'll do is they'll take what they learned from you, take what we know about the marketing, and the professional needs to come up with their own criteria of what they want in the products. Do you want 15 products, or would you prefer to, you know, boy, I can run my mobile grooming salon on 4 or 5 products. That's important to me. Somebody might have a spa and say, we want to have an assortment. These are the criteria that the customer can build, but you got to be grounded. And folks, I'm telling you, what I love about the Groom Pod is Susie and Barbara here, all they're trying to do is ground you with good education. You got to have an informed opinion, okay? And the way you do this is objectively. If you're dependent on social media and just the advertising and the groupthink, that's all subjective. We're going to own you, baby. You know, but what you got to be able to do is you got to be able to sort through this. And that's the difference between selling a pet parent. I'll give the great example of, from an education standpoint, I got to put my disclaimer in here so I don't get sued. When the Furminator came out, that it really was a cool tool, and it got its start with the groomers. And look at how much hair you can get out, right? Damn, they went about selling that to the professional pretty good, but then what they did is they opened it up to the mom and pop pet owner who decimated their animal's coats and destroyed it and did so many.
One skin.
My point is, there's a difference in selling a professional and selling a pet owner. And a lot of the marketing we see isn't directed to the pet owner, all these claims. And I just saw something on the internet. Somebody was asking about, well, they were talking about my product. I really love Best Shot, they said, but I'd like to get an upscale product. I thought we were upscale. It's professional. We're like a results-oriented product. And what she was talking about was luxury.
Yeah, you just want to pay more? Go ahead.
Yes.
I'm not folding that person. They were led there by our industry and how it promotes and what its narrative is. And we're thinking that some marketers sitting there pushing luxury and upgrade to a shampoo. Well, if you're buying professional products and you're a professional, I'm sorry, I don't get it. It needs distinction. It needs clarification. That's where the marketing can be confusing.
Yeah, some companies market under the premise that if it's the most expensive, it must be the best. And that's just an old myth.
Yeah.
And it produces results. And some companies choose to utilize that. They don't voice that, but they prey upon that supposition.
Yep. Where there is some truth, if you're buying a shampoo or a conditioner, as a professional who's got all that criteria, some of which you mentioned earlier, you're going to pay more for a good conditioner. The question of it is $50, $60? What's the difference between that and paying $120 for a gallon? But for me, the big difference is $50, $60.
Right.
That's the only difference.
Wrap it up, Dave.
Yeah, I'm sorry for being so talkative.
Okay. No, you're wonderful. We appreciate that. And we appreciate you pointing out, again, the value that you see in the Groom Pod, that we're here to establish a more clear and solid foundation for our listeners to use in utilizing, purchasing, and using products. It's important. We're kind of a filter in between the two ends there, and we're out to help distinguish. We're not doing testing. We're not reviewing tests. We are kind of filtering the marketing and the performance and those entities. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for pointing that out and for appreciating what we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I think as professionals, we need to be aware of the good marketing and then the pitfalls of marketing. So we got to be aware and we got to be cautious. We got to be mindful.
Well, because marketing utilizes psychology. If I could do it all over again, I would get into the psychology of marketing. And in fact, I would like to write a book about that, because it's fascinating how much the color of the package can result in more sales or less sales or no sales. And psychology is being manipulated in marketing. So you just need to be aware of that's happening.
Yep.
And you say, oh yeah, I love that color of that product. Well, of course you do.
Yeah. They spent a lot of money figuring out that was a driver, a motivator that got you to move that product.
Yeah. And drivers have changed. Motivators have changed. You used to want high foaming products, but now you're more likely to want quick rinsing products.
As a professional, yes.
And those two things are kind of different.
They're very different.
Foam is harder to rinse. So there. So, well, let's wrap this up, Susie.
Yeah.
Take us to the finish line.
Okay. Well, just keep in mind, everyone, it's all about being an educated consumer. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Thank you for supporting our sponsors. Thank you for the shears from Precision Sharp. We really appreciate that. And there'll be more on that in the future. And don't forget to show up at the Show Season 10 sale by registering at Show Season website or at the Groom Pod discussion group. It's tagged up at the top. All right. Happy grooming, everybody. Thanks, Dave. See you next week on the Groom Pod. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody.
Care of yourselves, because we love you.